Well, hey everybody, and welcome back to X-Files Diaries. I'm Annie.
And I'm Jen.
And we have a very special guest today, Avi Quijada.
Hi, everyone.
We are going to be talking with Avi and her history with the X-Files, but first, we're going to let Jen read some tweets of the week.
He's made outrageous public statements on an internet site.
That wasn't him. That was me. And they're not outrageous.
Okay, tweets of the week. Now, these are all in response to our episode about ranking, which is a very popular episode. And for that podcast episode, we were joined by @GreyCouton, a.k.a. Nicole. Thanks, Nicole, for joining us.
Yeah.
And lots of great responses to that. Lots of thoughts on the ranking and on our thoughts about the ranking. So thanks for those. From Trekker207. Just finished the up. Nice job. Thank you. A few things I noticed during the up that didn't make the podcast. The cow falls at 3 a.m. The cops are there after sunrise. What happened during those hours in between? There was a cot in the room. So what do you think happened with the cot? More of an accessory piece? And the director kept continuity. Both characters slept on his or her side of the bed in each own's hotel room. So sharing a bed would be NBD. Exactly, Trekker 207. No big deal at all.
How did that not come up?
How did that not come up? Because, yeah, that's a thing, right? Mulder and Scully do tend to have a side of the bed that they sleep on, right? Consistently.
Yeah, I meant just in general talking about the sleeping arrangements and the overnights, because I feel like we didn't really talk about that as much as we very much should have.
We didn't. I mean, there was just so much to talk about.
Yeah.
And yeah, we didn't really get into, like, we were more just kind of like, what a trope. But we didn't really, like,
take it.
We didn't really take it to the place that we could and should have, which is what really did happen in that situation.
Well, first things first, it's really funny that this came up because I was talking to some friends about this recently because I'm trying to figure this out for fan fiction purposes. What exactly, which nights they had to share a room.
Right.
And we were all talking about it and we were like, well, the cow hit at 3 a.m, just like Trekker said.
Yeah.
So what, and I assume, and you know, at the very earliest, it's broad daylight, but at the very earliest, everyone's there like at 7, I guess we could say, maybe 6, like, I don't know, in the morning.
So I guess, it depends on what time sunrise is, I guess,
in
that part of the world. If it was, I just have to say, if it was Edmonton and it was summertime, the sun would be probably up around 4, but we're really far north.
Yeah,
so
no.
It's a little different.
That's not how it works over here, I would say. No. And also depends on obviously the time of year, and this would have been August. So I think I think it's possible that maybe at the very, very earliest it would have to be like 6 a.m. So let's just say,
and there's a lot of people there. Like how early can the chainsaw cow cutting guy get there? I mean, he can't be like leaping from bed with his chainsaw in hand.
Exactly. I mean, it's just such a strange decision to make. I mean, I understand why they have to have that follow-up scene in daylight. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of reasons for that. But it's just interesting to me that nobody really seemed to care that there was this several hour gap that we don't really know what happened yet. And I assume, I assume Mulder had to go and shack up with Scully. Although I was saying, to be fair, we don't really know that they're booked until the following day. So it's very possible that there could have been an extra room to shack him up in. But
I
don't think that's happening. Like, I can totally see, I can totally see like a weremonster situation where he's just pacing around in Scully's room, like telling telling her all his theories. Like, I don't think anyone got any sleep. I guess.
No, I mean, the whole cow falling through the roof would really disrupt your sense of peace for the rest of the night, probably.
Yeah.
So, there'd be a lot of talk, I think. A lot of chit-chat at that point.
But I love what he or she, whoever it was, Trekker, I don't know who they are, but said about the sides of the bed, because that was a really good point, and they do stay pretty continuous with those sides of the bed. Scully's usually on the, would we call that the left side, and Mulder's usually on the right. When we see him in a bed, which is rare.
Yes.
But it was a nice little callback. I love it.
That was really good.
So we talked a lot about that one, but
really would be no big deal for them to share a bed, because it's like, this is all fine. There's no like which side you want. It's like they're both happy.
And I didn't notice the cot, actually.
I didn't either.
I'm going to have to go back and look because I did not notice that. So I will have to go check that out. But thanks for pointing that out. That's an interesting detail.
Thanks, Trekker. That was a good catch. So I'll definitely go back and check that again. Thank you. From Like a Kid in a Candy Store, ROFLMAO @Jens. what's it going to take for her to fucking stay dead? Sorry, not sure about the F word. No, I mean, I don't know if you're not sure, but I mean, I probably did say fucking so.
We are always sure about the F word.
Yeah, we're pretty sure about the F word. And when I start talking about Diana, it pops out a little bit more often. Can I just say, I like shock my mother with how much I swear on the podcast because, I mean, I do swear in regular life, but something about the podcast really brings it out of me because I get rather passionate. So
oh, yeah.
Apologies if I offend, but I can't seem to stop myself. Like a kid in the candy store says, I really enjoyed this. Thank you so much, ladies. Y'all so funny. I love the ring, King Mulders. I'm telling you, Scully, that cow got my name on it. Crack yeah. me up. That's the kind of thing he was saying, right? While he was pacing around the room after 3 a.m. after yeah. the cow incident.
He tried that on her multiple times.
I'm just see that.
He's like, I'm going to get a laugh eventually yeah. because it's a
I'm
good one.
I'm just going to keep trying. Yeah, I've done that a time or two. from Kathy G. OMG, I'm screaming about the timeline. Yes, that makes so much sense. Thank you. And Lindlow replied, yes, I love this. Awesome. Catch my Annie. Boom. What were the episode dates of the early season 7 eps? I seem to remember that they aired very late November, but maybe they actually happened earlier. And Kathy G says they had to be in the summer because they were connected to biogenesis. Some time lapse between I'm more fatty and hungry makes sense. And ranking fits right in there. And then those all, yay, I was willing to pretend if the dates didn't work out. But the fact that they do makes me giddy. I agree, Lindlow. I'm all willing to pretend when it comes to the timeline. But isn't it nice when we don't have to, Annie?
It's nice when it actually works out into something that is somewhat sensical. And look, I'm not here saying that at the time, I have said multiple times on this very podcast that the timeline is, pardon the F word, fucked. It's a mess. But when there's certain situations where it just kind of works together very nicely, I can kind of sit back and go, oh, well, I'm so glad I don't have to work this one out. It actually lines up very nicely. This is one of those situations, I think.
It's like a miracle when it happens. And so we're excited about it. And Lindlow also says, love this. So fun hearing Gay Crouton. Boom. And her insights, wasn't it? And Nicole is always a delight to have.
Oh, yeah.
Ranking was one of the first eps I saw and what made me jump aboard the ship. So I'll always adore it in its tropey glory. I'm so on board with the season 7 theory. That makes all the sense. I rewatched after listening and appreciated all the little moments so much more. Mulder's face when the mayor mistakes Scully for his wife. Mulder's behavior when he realizes Holman is on to them. Scully's gasp of what? When Sheila says, you love him, don't you? And I noticed for the first time that Sheila actually winks at Scully right after Holman tells Mulder, you should try it sometime. I mean, every single person in that town is onto them. Those beautiful, adorable morons. Well said, Lindlow.
Yeah.
Well said. Yeah, I can't agree more. And from Sarah, also known as MSR or Bust, which I love, love the theory about ranking happening in season 7. So much so that I did some digging. And I think we have a pretty solid case. And Sarah definitely did some digging. Let's see what she discovered. First, we know from the welcome table and the name tags at the 20-year reunion that it was for the class of 79. So ranking occurred in August of 99. We know that the episode Monday, which happens over halfway in season 6, takes place on 3/1/99, which in North America would mean March 1st, 99, from Mulder's pay stub.
Yeah.
This is still 5 months before Rain King. Milagro is not included in that time span because for some reason it took place in February of 99, as evidenced by the newspaper Mulder picks up. In season 7, episode 2, Hungry, Durwood's prescription fill date is 6/18/99. His prescription still looks nearly full and it looks like summer outside. So I think it's safe to say that Rain King happened between Hungry and Millennium.
Yeah.
Good work there, Sarah. Excellent detective work. Loving all that.
Yeah, I love that too.
Great points. Lots more support there for the theory, I think.
The only thing interesting about that I didn't really take into account, and I'm sure it's on my timeline somewhere, it's a joint effort with other people, is the Milagro thing happening in February, which would have been before, what was the other one she said that was in March?
Monday.
Yeah. Monday. That's interesting to me because I don't know what the date is, but I don't think they get the X-Files back until after February.
Yeah, that's a good point as
and
well.
And we know that Milagro is an X-File, but at the same time, they're working like at his house. And
they are spending a lot of time at his apartment.
Or his apartment. Yeah. I don't know. I'm going to have to give that one another watch. I do love the idea when these dates just are inexplicably out of order. I do find that fascinating, because then I have a reason to think, okay, well, what if I pluck this episode and like pop it back here? What then does it, what new meaning does it take on? Which is interesting. Like if this is in fact Milagro taking place, you know, well before Rain King, then the idea of Padgett saying Agent Scully is already in love, it could be, it could also just be, she could just be like, who's he talking about? What? You know, because just Scully being in total denial, which kind of makes it really funny. But yeah, not to go on too long about that, but I just think all this timeline stuff is incredibly interesting.
It's great. I think for me, when I see a date on the screen on the X-Files, I just close my eyes and turn away, because I know it'll just annoy and trouble and concern me. So I give all the kudos to those that are willing to put on the hip waders and wade into the rushing river that is the X-Files timeline, because it can be very challenging, and
it can pull you under.
And it can pull you under. And so those that have been able to remain upright and make, not only to put it together, but to be able to make some emotional sense out of it, I have nothing but admiration for y'all. So well done. Trekker 207 had another tweet. Still listening to the EP. Great find on the reunion year, Annie. Your comments about EP timelines, I'd love to hear more about it, and your thoughts about for it all. It would be fun to rewatch the EPs in a more logical order. It's, this is very much like what we're just saying, right?
Yeah, I gotta line everything up on my next rewatch. I will put together a proper order timeline. That sounds like a fun project.
Wouldn't that be fun? And then actually watch it in the order that we kind of think the episodes happened in, as best as we can figure, and see what kind of implications they have that they wouldn't have had otherwise. I love that idea. It's a great idea. It's high level of difficulty, but the payoff would be amazing.
It's probably very silly, but it's fun.
Yeah. Well, this is it, right? Silly but fun is what fandom's all about.
Yeah.
That's what we're here for.
Exactly.
From Marina. Marina says, liked every bit of this podcast episode, from an unexpected timeline theory to a random Diana Fowley banter. I loved it. How did Diana Fowley come up? But she always finds a way. It was very random. That was not really necessarily intended to be part of the episode, but I suspect I contributed to that.
I think I brought it up because that's one of the reasons I hate ranking where it is in the timeline.
Oh, right, because it's
in a really
Diana
bad
Fowley's
place. Not only like in the, it's just the beginning half of season six is just a kind of icky Diana place, like leading all the way up between that and One Son. I just don't like it there. Right. So that's why Diana came up.
It all fit in with the timeline theory. So it wasn't entirely my fault, but I suspect that I brought the rage. Marina also says, I've never given much thought to The Rain King. It didn't really stand out to me, but now with all the parallels and theories you mentioned, I'm a rewatch it. Thanks, Marina. The Rain King never really stood out to me that much back in the day either, to be honest. So I get where Marina's coming from. So it's only in sort of later years that I appreciated it for the gem that it is. From I Had You Big Time. The beauty of your podcast is that after listening to you, I go and rewatch the said episode and I get to see them in a totally new light. I used to watch the episode series in order, but not anymore. Thanks for the enlightenment and love. Thank you. I had you big time. Sorry that we've upset the normal order which you watched the series, but hey, that's great. I'm so glad that we're making you want to rewatch the episodes that we're talking about.
This is an old practice. This is an old practice for me. I've been switching Leonard Betts and Never Again since the beginning of time. I will never watch those in any other order.
Yeah.
So.
Nice. Yeah. I never watched the series in order, so none of it makes any sense or difference to me when it comes to watching. I just watch wherever the mood takes me. It's usually something that's like something that came up on the podcast or something that I saw on Twitter, or I'm just in the mood for a particular style of episode. So I just follow my heart when
it's
it comes to.
It's a good way to go.
Which does mean there's a lot of episodes that I don't watch a lot because they just don't come up in my mind. So that's the drawback of being random like I am. From the Robbins Gang, I'm late to the game as usual. Not that late. You're still in plenty of time. This episode is gold. I am on a hike listening and laughing out loud alone in the woods. Akrae Crouton is a gem and such an amazing contributor to this crazy fandom. She sure is.
Oh, yeah.
She is a gem. And I love the idea of walking along the woods just laughing at our podcast. Mm-hmm. It sounds slightly crazy and really entertaining. So I just love picturing that. Whitney says, because I'm quite new to this fandom, welcome to the fandom, Whitney. Mm-hmm. I don't really have anyone to talk to about the X-Files. That's why I really love listening to your podcasts, especially when it's about one of my favorite episodes. The fact that I was born in the year season 9 ended doesn't help. No, you can't help that, Whitney. It's not your fault that you came into the world too late to, be part of the fandom when it was at its zenith, but we're happy you're in the fandom now and that we're able to contribute to your enjoyment of it. And the X-Files fandom is, to me, for a show that has been, you know, officially off the air for a couple of years and largely off the air for, you know, many decades, really. The fandom is surprisingly active, I think, and wonderfully so on the amount of discourse that still happens on Twitter, the fact that there's still tons of new fanfic coming out all the time. The fact that there's more than one X-Files podcast is so tremendously wonderful to me. And it's a great fandom to join. So welcome, Whitney. Do join in on Twitter and at every opportunity, and you'll find that everyone is really quite fun and friendly.
Please do.
So thank you, everyone, for your tweets again this week. That was fantastic. And tweet us anytime at XFD Podcast. And we'd love to hear from you. Thanks.
Mulder, the internet is not good for you.
Okay, so today we're going to be speaking to Avi Quijada, who has many connections with the X-Files in many different interesting ways. And we're going to talk about all of them today, hopefully. So she's got a lot of interesting stories, I think, to tell us. So welcome, Avi. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure. And so let me just start by saying you grew up, am I right in thinking you grew up in Venezuela? Is that correct?
Yes. I was born in Venezuela.
All right. Was that where you were living when you got into the X-Files?
Yes, I was about to start my year as an exchange student here in the U.S. And my cousin and I were in the process of applying to be an exchange student. Mm-hmm. And we had like many late nights trying to like get all the paperwork done and all mm-hmm. this stuff. And one night she just casually went and said, it was 3 a.m. and said like, oh, we should like chill and watch TV for a second. And at that time, they were showing The X-Files, and I had never seen it. And she was really into it, but low-key not quite the fan that I would become then. But we just watched that one episode, and she really didn't explain that it was a show. We just sat down and watched it, and I thought it was a movie.
Oh,
and right. It wasn't up until the next day that I told her, like, I kept thinking about this thing because it was the episode Unrequited.
Oh,
which
nice.
Is about you know, blind spots, and yeah. I actually have a very particular relationship with blind spots, and it just kept playing in my mind. It's like, oh, this is so funny that like it kind of like fit my own mm-hmm. you know thing about certain parts of my life, and then she went and said, no, that's actually a show. Yeah. You can like watch it later in the week. They do like a marathon every Sunday in this channel. I'm like, great. So I'm doing that. But then as it happened, I couldn't, because like in Venezuela, cable wasn't readily available to everyone.
Right.
And we live in different towns, and in my town, we didn't have it. Right. And so it took until I actually got to the United States. The first movie had already premiered. Mm-hmm. So I had a lot of catch up to do throughout that year that I was abroad and watched the movie then. And nice. By the time that I came back to Venezuela, I was like full on.
Nice.
Fan.
You were hooked.
Yeah.
So, when you went back to Venezuela, were you able to watch it when you went back?
When I went back to Venezuela, yeah. Then by then, I was already graduated high school and done my year abroad, but not entirely, but like mm-hmm. most of it. And And I went back to go to college, which was in a completely different city. It was actually in the capital city of Venezuela, where like everything was available. So I had cable, and like I could watch it every Wednesday.
Nice.
That was really good. Yeah.
So you started watching while it was sometime shortly after the movie had come out. Is that correct?
Yeah, I was. My first episode is in Requited, which is I think it's season
four.
Four. Right. Yeah, season four. And then I had to, like, when I landed in the States, it was basically, I knew that the movie had come out because I came in 98, 99.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't watch the movie. My hosts in Pennsylvania, they were like, oh, we could, like, go and rent it. I'm like, no, I want to watch everything. And then get to the movie.
So you wanted to go in order. Huh?
Yeah. When I finally got to Unrecruited again, it's like, oh my God, finally. but yeah, it was great. And they were also very big fans as well.
Oh, wow.
They actually had some of the VHS sets there, but like we actually had to go and like rent them at the video store.
What are the odds? That's awesome. It almost feels like it meant to be.
Definitely meant to be. And so many people were into the X-Files back then, too. It was just it was a thing. So that's great.
Yeah, and it was really fun because when I got there, they had just gotten their first computer. I had a very, like, old-timey computer in my house in Venezuela, but, like, this one was, like, state-of-the-art, which... Yeah. In comparison by now, it's like, oh my God, this dinosaur. But like back then we like had to connect via modem and like gradually went into cable and it was like accessing all these actual websites that I had never visited before and seeing the official site and all the stuff that I'd never been in contact with. So it was actually pretty nice.
That's cool. Did it sort of change how you watched the show when you saw a little bit more sort of what was happening online with the X-Files?
I mean, I guess it was changing in the way that it allowed me to know that, like, a lot of other people had discussions about things and whatnot. And now the experience that I had at home, which was, like, very, you know, the conversation could vary here and there, but, like, we were kind of, like, of the same mind.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, like, you would get exposed to all their different opinions, whether they like them or not, or, like, ideas based on the episode or whatever. But, granted, I came in when, like, a lot of other people had seen the first five seasons already. So, I discovered then, which I think is something to my advantage throughout my life, is that I don't care about spoilers or being spoiled.
Mm. Right. That's a good thing.
Like people would talk about things that I hadn't seen yet. And right. I'd be like, oh, that's fine. It doesn't really matter if I haven't seen it because I haven't experienced it in their performance and the way that they said something or like, it's not the same.
Right.
So that came to be really useful because when I went back to Venezuela, then we had a 6-month period of waiting period between the moment that it would premiere in the United States and the moment that we would get it.
Right.
So it was fine.
Yeah. So you knew you had a few spoilers before you saw some of the episodes, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah, but you didn't mind. That's good. I'm so spoiler sensitive. So I'm always like, no, I could never watch this now. So I think it's cool when you can just kind of say, yeah, whatever. I mean, that is just that's the world we're in now. It's a world of spoilers. So
now it's
much better
impossible.
Just to be at peace with it. It is really. So, yeah, it's just better to be at peace with that sort of thing. So I think that's really wise. So most of sort of the second half of the series you watch sort of semi live, like, you know, just on a 6-month delay, but more live than a lot of folks probably have. So.
Yeah.
So you were to right in there with everything from like about season 6 or so onward, hey?
Yeah.
Very cool. And you mentioned to us previously that you're a fan of, am I right in saying a fan of seasons 8 and 9? Would that be accurate?
Yeah.
Now, see, that is an unusual thing. Season 8 doesn't seem super unusual to me. A lot of folks are coming around on Season 8, myself included. Season 9, I find very interesting. Why don't you sort of, a lot of folks listening right now are saying, 9, I don't think so. So would you like to sort of like make a case for why you think 8 and 9 are strong seasons?
I think, I mean, one, it probably had a lot to do with the fact that I hadn't simmered with my love for Mulder and Scully for 5 whole years. And then, you know, joined the show.
Right.
I mean, I kind of like, yes, I had 2 seasons, 3 seasons of only them, like being live.
Mm-hmm.
But I, as much as I love them, I didn't have this like, oh, I'm going to die because David Duchovny would leave.
We
can't relate, Avi. We can't relate.
Everyone else was dying. But
you're much more practical about it.
And I think for me, actually, I think that by the time that we got there, I had already made a decision that I wanted to be a filmmaker and a storyteller. I think that it also meant like, oh, like, where are they going with this? And we also, back then, I don't think we had had the experience of our generation having an experience of the lead of a show leaving and then how a show goes on without it. I think a lot of shows happen to have that now. And then there's a case of like Grey's Anatomy that has had so many of their cast leaving. But now... back then, I would say, it was a complete or like fairly new territory for our generation or the people that were watching the show at the time. And I think it was an interesting thing to see at the time. Then I also came from a generation that, or like my own fandoms where I really liked Robert Patrick.
You're a Robert Patrick fan.
So I, you know, when I knew that he was going to come in and they had been saying in so many ways that he wasn't going to be, oh, just replacing Mulder. It's a character on his own and how they were going to treat it. For me, that was a whole new discovery because as much as, you know, every season will have a really amazing cliffhanger, there was never a bigger cliffhanger than season 7 to season 8.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was not only in terms of story, but it was also in terms of production.
Yeah,
so for not only the livelihood of everyone, but it's just like, where are we going? So that was great for me. And the stories in the way that season set off, it's just like, are we going to get Mulder back or not? Whether you take into account that we already knew that Duchovny had some episodes sign on or not, or... you just went a purist and never knew that. It was like, okay, are we going to find Mulder? Is he going to be alive? Is he going to be an alien? Is he gonna, like, what's happening? Is this baby theirs? Is it an alien? Is it going to be a girl, a boy? Like, it was so many questions, right?
It was exciting. It was
that's
exciting.
True. Yeah, that's, you're kind of winning me over here.
And then, you know, I had many moments where throughout the thing, we finally got to see moments for Gillian Anderson that we had never seen in the past.
Yeah.
Because whether you like the storylines where she gets to portray the vulnerability of being a soon-to-be mom or just a woman or a person that has lost her other, the significant other, there's so many aspects of her that hadn't been explored in the past and where you start to see... you see moments shine through where you can see Jillian's chops so out there. And I feel like This Is Not Happening and Dead Alive are moments that I can never get rid of. It's just like, oh my God, these are like such good episodes. And those tiny little moments and like Within and Without and so many other episodes where she's trying or Scully's trying to be Mulder and Scully is trying to play that narrative and trying to remain that center for the Exiles. I think those are so valuable in all regard that I couldn't think of the Exiles without season 8 at all. And I know of a lot of people that definitely hadn't even seen season 8 9 when the revival came about. And they're like, well, I'm going to have to see those two seasons. And I'm like, dude, like, you have no idea.
Yeah.
You don't know.
Yeah, so much happened.
Season 8, I have far fewer problems with season 8 than I do with 9. And I do want to hear your take on 9 as well. But I do think that it's like, you're absolutely right that we got to see Scully's arc go in a direction that we'd never seen before. And all I see, like, I feel like I see a lot of like anger about that, or like frustration at that. And I just don't get it. Like, I don't understand why people are upset the fact that like the show went this direction. It went a different direction. You know, they're trying something different. They're giving her an opportunity to play a different type of woman. Every type of woman is valid, and like I feel like I'm constantly having to like say that to people who are really frustrated with the pregnancy and the baby having, and I'm like, look, women have babies, a lot of them do, it's a thing that happens.
In terms of the baby discussion, I do have an opinion. I think that I didn't have this much of a strong opinion until after the revival.
Well, yeah.
But
let's take the revival out of it. Yeah.
I have to say, at the time, I didn't have a problem with it. It's just like, you know, it's been there from the beginning. I
mean, it has.
She had wanted to be a mother and was heartbroken because she couldn't be one.
Absolutely.
So, like, exploring this plot point, regardless of how it came to be and how it is an actual plot point discourse and how it came to be. It's not a bad thing to do.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that.
Season 9, I would say, it's hard to judge season 9 because you have a completely new dynamic on top of the dynamic that you had been building on season 8. One being that now Scully is out of the X-Files, quote unquote, because he wasn't entirely out. And two being that Monica Reyes is now part of the team. And in so many areas, kind of like the Mulder to Doggett Scully. And so like that was kind of like this flip-flopping of things where you needed to chew on a lot of things. On top of that, the fact that, well, now we don't even have, you know, Duchovny's presence to be around in one way or another. You also had to make do with the fact that, oh, well, he took off. Why did he take off? Mm. And taking off is not as interesting. It's interestingly developed in the way of why did he take off as it was from him being absent because he needed to be rescued.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I feel like as much as I love everyone that wrote X-Files, those are things where you start seeing the scenes and where you need to do a little bit of leaping to like justify certain choices.
Yeah.
Even though you knew in the back of your head that this is production problems that, you know, the company doesn't want to go back. So now we have to basically use Steve Kisiak to be in the shower and justify that.
Oh God. Well, I actually have something to say about that because and we're going to talk about Frank Spotnitz coming up, the wonderful Frank, who of course you know. And we were talking about this with Frank. I wanted to bring up what you said earlier about like there are lots of shows that deal with their leads leaving. Like Grey's Anatomy was a really good example. There's a lot of and they continue on. Like and they're like Grey's Anatomy, I feel like, is more popular now than it ever has been. Like I could be wrong about that, but it's very popular still because they treat it with care. And I feel like the problem with season 9 is that they knew going into season 9 they weren't going to have Duchovny, and they knew people were going to miss him, and they didn't treat that with care. And that's the problem. And because there is a reason he left. They say the reason that he left, but they say it in about a 10-second clip at the end of an episode that nobody watches. I see this over and over and over. It gets me so riled up because I see people saying, Mulder, what a jackass. He just left Scully. What an idiot. Yeah. And I'm constantly baffled.
Yeah, I constantly forget that it was her that asked him to leave.
Yes, and everybody forgets that, and they think that Mulder is an asshole all season long. And I know, and you know, the answers are there, but the show, I don't think, took care enough care with such a big departure to say, hey, he left for this reason. They had this conversation. There was a huge good reason that he had to leave. And then we wouldn't have been like the entire season been like, what the heck, Mulder? Like, you know what I mean?
Even though we
know Mulder, like Frank said, I don't know, you probably listened to the interview with Frank, and he's like, well, that never bothered me because of course Mulder wouldn't do that. And I'm like, well, that's why it never bothered me, but it bothers other people, you know, because it wasn't given the care. That's what I wanted to say.
You needed a little bit more of, pressure into that plot point. So people actually knew that it wasn't, because I also feel like, because the person that goes to try to find out why Mulder left is Doggett, and Scully doesn't want to have a heart-to-heart with Doggett.
Yeah.
Doesn't want to explain her choices to him.
Well, and I think she doesn't want to put Mulder in further danger, which I think is made...
Well, that's it, but like, it's also, when you talk in terms of the relationship that these characters have, for example, we see it later in the season, but we also have it a little bit on the ending of season 8, when Monica Reyes and Scully, for example, bond really easy because she reminds her of Melissa, because she's a woman, because she defended her and like with no reason whatsoever and whatnot. She does have a relationship with Doggett. But he's a man. She doesn't necessarily have to have that confidence with him to have an open-hearted conversation with him. And then there's also been that tension, whether we address it or not, where she might have felt that he had feelings for her.
Interesting.
So in my head, I don't want to say that this is a conversation that I have with Frank or anything like that, but I feel like one of the mistakes that we get into in not having enough pressure into that plot point is that we had that conversation with Doggett. It makes sense plot-wise because Doggett is the one that is pursuing, trying to figure out where Mulder went. So it makes total sense that he's the one that goes and like recriminates to her, like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
But at the same time, had we had that conversation with someone else, whether it be her mom or Monica or even Skinner, where she has a lot more vulnerability with, then we could have had a more emotional response and a more memorable moment for us to have this conversation.
I love that fix, by the way. Can I just add that on to me? We did a show about our top fixes for the X-Files. I'm going to add an addendum to that now, and it's going to be exactly what you just said, Abby, where Scully just has that same conversation but with someone else, because it would have made it totally different. So God, that's brilliant, I think.
Could you imagine having an actual conversation with her mom, like about actual stuff that matters, like how effective that would have been? Like, and I mean, I'm not trying to like get the scoop, Avi, because I know you're not like telling us inside stuff, but like, did you ever find out any sort of satisfactory reason why they didn't do that? Because it drives me bonkers to this day that like even Scully's frustrating in that episode, because Doggett comes in and you know, I get everything you're saying and I agree with you that she's not going to confide in him in that moment, but you literally like you get the answer, he's just gone. That's the answer that we get. He's just gone. It's literally like they're saying, you don't get to know, you just have to deal with it. And
then it's Skinner that kind of like telegrams to him that it's like, oh well, you know, he got asked.
Right.
But no, I didn't. I do know that there were so many other ideas that got like dropped, whether it was in the writer's room or in the editing room, where there were moments with Maggie that, you know, they would have conversations or like longer moments in the scenes or whatnot. But no, not actually.
That would have, you're right, that would have been amazing. And that would have been a really effective way to just explain it away in one scene. And everyone would have been fine. Like, everybody would have been like, okay, that makes sense. He's protecting them. He's protecting themselves. Okay, that's totally a Mulder thing to do. It's anyway. Yeah. Anyway, sorry. I've been thinking about this today a lot for some reason. So it's actually
it troubles us all.
Perfect timing that we talked about it. Yeah.
No, that was all really, really interesting. I think that I would have been so much more on board with season 9 because I was watching it at the time too, and I think I would have been so much more on board if number one that there had been like a more fulsome explanation and a more memorable explanation, exactly as you described. It would have made me feel better about what was happening within the story. And also it just would have made me feel better in terms of this is still the X-Files and there's still an effort for us to understand what's happening here. But I just kind of at the time had this vibe that like Annie says that there was just sort of like, just deal with it, everyone. This is just how it is. And I was kind of like in the mood where I was like, no, I'm not.
Yeah. It was pretty much the attitude that Scully had at the moment.
Yeah.
It's I'm closed off to be able to anyone.
Yeah. So, it makes sense within her character, but I just wanted more.
We can move off of this, but I do have to say one thing, and I do need to put this out into the universe because I do think it's a little brilliant, as frustrating it is. The end of Nothing Important Happened Today, part 2, which is where we get the only information that we get about Mulder leaving, which is when Doggett and Kirsch are in the office and they're having the conversation, and Doggett figures it out. In that very same scene, Kirsch literally is talking about how the whole thing about how, you know, things are huge, things happen, and even kings can miss it if they're not paying attention. Yeah. And I feel like that is such a big middle finger to the fans, especially all the ones that are not paying attention and totally missed this. But I think it's kind of so brilliant. Meta. It's kind of brilliant that in this one scene, everybody forgets about that he says that. When I was rewatching it recently, I was just like, well, holy shit. The answer was there and everyone forgot because no one was paying attention. Anyway, I just wanted to say that.
I love that. I never noticed that myself. It's like, it's either like really ironic or like super meta or both. And I love both aspects of that. It's kind of like, the scene in which everyone forgets is a scene in which they talk about everyone forgetting.
Exactly.
Which is kind of brilliant, actually. Yeah. So
It's very tongue in cheek. It's kind of when like you're so mad at the X-Files, but you're like, God, I can't be mad at you because you're so fucking smart. Like, it's one of those moments where I really think that. Anyway.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, no, that's all brilliant. So, Avi, you were back in Venezuela watching up to the end of season 9. Is that correct?
Yeah.
All right. Cool. Can I just ask, like, Annie and I are used to watching the X-Files from the perspective of being in North America when it's airing, and most of our listeners probably have too, and in the UK. But do you have a sense that it was a different experience watching it somewhere like Venezuela, which is very different culturally from where I'm from, which is Canada?
Definitely. I mean, I would say my point of comparison is certain type of Americans. I couldn't say every American thinks this way, but I found it funny that I thought that many more things were plausible than Americans would do. Mostly because, one, my upbringing, two, my country. My country is so superstitious. So superstitious. And things, for instance, like voodoo and Santeria have a very big place in our culture. Not that I practice it, my brother actually does. So like I was really, you know, in the know of things that happened in certain episodes where those things were addressed. And so for me, it wasn't like this exotic thing. It was like, this thing that I actually listen to my breakfast. So like,
Scully must have been kind of irritating to you, huh?
I mean, this is the thing. Because in my house, we believe in so many things. It didn't really mean that I believed in all of them. So from time to time, the X-Files and Scully actually helped in a way to draw me off of believing in everything. So like you have so many things that are mixed, and so you grow up on that. And then on top of that, you live in a country that is constantly, you know, being witness of phenomena where, like, you know, because we're, the country actually has an official religion, which is Catholicism. Then all these like virgin miracles happen all the time, whether they're true or not. So like you grow up on that and like, you know, that is not so far removed from beings landing on Earth.
Yeah.
Because if a virgin can cry blood, then why can't we have, you know, UFOs?
Yeah. That's absolutely actually really interesting. I want to ask you this. Does the idea of the sort of dichotomy in Mulder and Scully's belief, like Mulder believes in aliens but not in God, and then Scully vice versa, did that like confuse you or confound you, or did that make a strange kind of sense?
I mean, for me, it sounded perfectly logical, because you have doctors, for instance, that are Catholic, and I mean, it didn't happen at the time, but it happened later on that my uncle got super sick, and he didn't, like, doctors didn't have anything else to try on him. And at the time, the only thing that they would tell my family was like, well, you need to pray right now. Like, you know, prayer for so many other people, it's just magic.
Yeah.
For like, I don't know, cockamamie things. But I mean, it was something that was, you know, addressed and embraced. And I mean, for me, the fact that Scully was a scientist in a way and still allowed a part of her to still cling on to that vision of life, it was normal. It wasn't extraneous. For me, it was weirder that Mulder didn't think or didn't embrace much more or didn't bring up much more the fact that Jesus could have been an alien, for example.
Mm. Yeah.
Or that his miracles were actually alien technology.
Mm. Maybe like that would have been like blasphemous. I wonder.
Right.
They didn't go near that.
Well, not necessarily. Yeah, no, it would have been interesting. I can see that. I think someone needs to write that fanfic.
For us, this stuff is just so not weird that we just give it as a given and we don't explore on them. Mm-hmm. And so, for instance, the fact that miracles happen, for example, whether they're true or not, they're just a thing.
Yeah.
And so we don't question them. Mm-hmm. And so we don't go like, well, okay, so a miracle happened. How come it happened?
Right.
Like, and why to you? And why not everyone else? And why this particular virgin that does miracles by and manifests itself by putting glitter all over people? Like, how come, where's this glitter coming from? Has anyone studied this glitter? Like, no one ever questions that. And for me, it was like, if we had a Venezuelan X-File, this would have been one of them.
Wow. Cool. I like that.
That would be super cool.
No, this whole conversation is really interesting. That's so interesting. That blows my mind because, yeah, I do. Obviously, I'm aware that like the cultural differences are in terms of things that people believe are all different all over. But in terms of like consuming the X-Files, I just find that really fascinating.
The X-Files is something different to everyone. That's what I've always found about the X-Files. And certainly culture is a big part of that as well. So that's really cool to me. So thanks for sharing all that. That was really, really interesting to me. So getting back to you, Avi, you were a fan, obviously, big fan, through season 9. And then at some point, and you can tell me when, you became a bit more professionally involved in the X-Files. Did you start with X-Files News? Is that how that came about?
Well, I did a brief stint on managing a fanfic website that was only dedicated actually to 8 and 9.
All right.
And it was called the FBI Most Unwanted.
Well, that's appropriate for those seasons, I'd have to say.
Yeah.
And it was back in the day, remember that Yahoo Groups was only like a mailing list, and then you could have like a little bit more like an actual page that you could go into. And then there was an actual website that someone else was managing. Mm-hmm. And then she decided to retire. and leave the list to someone and the website to someone else. All right. And we're kind of like sharing the load for a while. Uh-huh. And that went on for a while until like I couldn't keep up. I had to go into my thesis dissertation and I didn't have the time. But I made great friends there.
So where did your career take you from there, Avi? Did you stay in Venezuela for a few years or at some point you wound up in the States?
I stayed in Venezuela. I started doing odd jobs here and there, even though they were like kind of like related to what I do now. Mm-hmm. I started working in a company that was the first one that brought in digital television in terms of like what we have now, like Netflix and stuff.
Yeah.
They were one of the pioneers. One of the companies that kind of like, you know, couldn't keep up at some point, but I was in the first batch.
Nice.
Then I got recruited to do a few features that were there by one of our outdoor creators there that had such a great luck to work for. Mm-hmm. Then I got recruited by HBO, and that's where we used to have HBO in Venezuela as a company in Venezuela to be the hub for Latin America.
All right.
So I used to work in the on-air department for a while.
Cool.
And that taught me so much, and I'm so grateful to have had the experience. But being there, I had two realizations. One, that I didn't want to work so far apart from the product, because basically what happened is that we would get a movie and I would have to promote a movie without having any kind of input from the creator of the movie.
Right.
And that felt like I was in some instances, bastardizing the effort of the creators of the movie by trying to do something to promote the movie that probably they wouldn't have vouched for.
Yeah.
Right.
And then two, that I was in tied to that same sense that I wanted to be more involved in creating something than just after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I had my taste in doing a feature or doing other things. And so at the time, I had been working nonstop from the moment that I had been in college to that moment. So I basically went to my mom and I said, I really need a break. Like I'm reaching the point of burnout and I haven't even been graduated, not even 5 years.
Yeah.
So that had been happening. And then at the same time, one of my friends from Chile went and texted me and said, like, hey, it's not only is the second movie happening, but we're going to have Chris Carter and Frank Spotless in Chile. Would you like to come?
Oh.
And as a representation for Venezuela, because I had been gathering with people that liked the show in Venezuela for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said yes, and just things just kind of started rolling where I would start looking online for news about the movie, and literally I typed it on Google, X-Files News, and at that time, Holy Simon had already secured that URL, so I knew there's going to be a website that was going to be by that URL.
Right.
And I got in touch with her and I told her, I'm going to Chile. I can cover this thing for you if you want, are interested.
Cool.
And so my career in XFN started there by offering that and kind of like reporting on that then later on.
Right, right.
And then as I'm preparing to go to Chile, I decided that I wanted to quit HBO. That I needed to sit and really figure out what I wanted to do in my life.
Right.
And I had the luxury at the time that I had my own apartment, that I had my own car, that, you know, that things were good.
Mm-hmm.
And I could afford to do that. And it was a little bit of a self-discovery year where, like, not only did I get to go to Chile and meet Chris and meet Frank, but also then I came to L.A. and fell in love with the graduate school that I ended up with, and mm-hmm. and came to LA.
Nice. But, so and were you continuing to do things for X-Files News at that point, or you just did that gig in Chile and that was it for the time being?
So what happened was that I had already scheduled coming to LA to not only come and meet the girls from X-Files News that were coming to the premiere and have the experience of being in LA for the premiere. But also, while that was happening, it was kind of like Fox took note of the website and decided to officialize us. And so we had a little bit more access than we thought we were going to have. Right. And then I land here and as kind of like a rerun of my life, Holly Simon, who had been the leader of the website, decided that she couldn't do it anymore. Mm-hmm. And we were in the middle of this big push to get, I want to believe, more, you know, butts on seats and get at least a good DVD release and whatnot. And we were like, well, what are we going to do? Are we going to just quit now? Mm-hmm. And back then it was Tiffany Duvall, Lisa Angelo, and I, and a few others that wanted to join in the push. And we were just kind of like this group that kept the site going in and out, a few more people until the end. But yeah, I eventually became the editor in chief for the site. And that all happened through grad school, through me trying to make it here in LA, through me going back to Venezuela, through me living in Panama, through me going back to Venezuela again, through me then finally coming here. Wow. Again. And
that's commitment.
And managing, you know, having enough people to cover Comic-Con every year, to cover New York Comic Con too, to maybe go abroad to certain things where we needed to go, to talk to the studio, to talk to TV, to talk to everyone behind the scenes, and managing all this stuff. And it was uncharted territory by all means. I mean, we didn't know if the push that we began as like, oh, let's have a good DVD launch, would then become into, oh, let's have a third movie. And then, oh, well, maybe not a movie, but maybe whatever happens. We didn't even know. And then when we finally got to the point where we got information that it was going to be a TV show, to, you know, figure out where we stood with that. Were we going to be participant of the push? Were we just going to continue being by the sidelines? And knowing what we wanted to do and when to stop too. You can't be thankful enough for the time that people put off the kindness of their hearts into, you know, joining XFM without pay or without anything.
Right.
But also you can't just expect everyone to be there forever.
Right.
And even ever resenting them and getting on with their lives. And even at some point, you know what? I'm not into the show anymore.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure people come and go. Yeah, because it does seem like for the work that you guys put into that, it is like a truly a labor of love. I mean, it's such a testament to how much you guys love the show that you're still doing it. I know that recently that the site shut down, correct?
It's shut down. It's right now we're actually moving it from one server to the other because we don't need to have it in the server that we have it at the moment. But the site went through so much stuff. At some point, you know, Holly, who was the owner of the site originally as xfilesnews.com, came back and we started working together and it was great. And it was awesome to have her over because she was the originary of the idea. But at some point, you know, her goals clashed with 20 other people that were working on the site and we decided to part ways. And that was pretty traumatic for me because I was basically the only one that had been there from the beginning until the end when we decided that. And that shift that happened as the new season was coming up, it was a really tough year for me because I had to like, okay, this is, you know, all the pressure of everything that I had to learn to to keep everything going. It was on me. And and like trying to like assure the team that we were going to be okay, that and I couldn't have done it without their own support, because it was, as much as it was our project, it was their project as well. And so, you know, it was really important for us to keep going until the end. You know, I mean, at some point when the separation was happening, we said, okay, how much have we logically spent on this website, not only in terms of like, you know, server space, but also like, you know, design for the website that actually has a value, or traveling, or, you know, hotels or tickets to things, and like food, and, you know, everything that we've needed to have, and giveaways that are not giveaways to us. We actually have to pay for those things.
Right.
And like, you know, and whenever we couldn't like actually get a deal from Fox, or like we couldn't get a deal from a producer or something. Well, you know, it crept up and crept up and crept up that it was almost close to $300,000.
Oh, my God.
And
wow.
That's an insane amount of money.
Yeah,
it is.
And so, I mean, you could send to school to three kids to very good schools.
Yeah.
Honestly.
And, yeah. So, because, you know, at some point you need to figure out, you know, this is enough.
Yeah. No, I think you do.
Yeah.
And you have to have a little time for yourself.
Yeah. And then it was, you know, for us, it was funny whenever people would even try to mention that Fox was paying us, because they actually never did.
Right.
Oh, really?
And I understand why. For me, in my head, it made sense, because if they started paying us, then they're paying us to be fans.
Right. No. I was actually going to ask about that, like your actual relationship between with you guys and Fox. I mean, they officialize you, but did you ever feel that that was sort of a double-edged sword? Like, did you ever feel like you had to be perhaps more diplomatic than maybe you would?
Definitely.
I mean, which sucks, because you're not getting paid, but you're still doing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yikes. Because you don't want to lose that access. I mean, it makes total sense.
I knew what the consequences might be whether we went rogue, you know, at some point. And I feel like the place where I drew the line was on our reviews. Whether we liked something or not, that was never going to be a thing.
Right.
And we went through different managements of Fox. We went through not only Fox Entertainment, but also, you know, actual 20th Century Fox, the actual, you know, feature type of Fox.
Right.
And they manage themselves very differently, and so some people would totally get it and be, you know, respectful of, you know, stepping on that line. Some other people weren't, and you had to deal with that. You had to, you know that maybe that week was not the best week to be emailing them about something, because you just said your truth.
Yeah, exactly.
And that was it. And I feel like for Even in that stage where you knew that sometimes you were more delicate about things than other people might have been, I do have to say that I recognize the way that they always had open arms to us, especially everyone at 1013. Because one thing was Fox, but another one was 1013, and another one was Big Light. And 1013, I could never in my life complain about anything ever. They were always so kind and graceful about everything that we might want. Maybe they can please us in like what we wanted to do or the plans that we wanted to have, because they were bound to things that Fox was dictating or things that were just basically couldn't happen. But I don't think we ever felt that we were being policed by them or being controlled by them. And Chris Carter was always so gracious and generous that, you know, it's not only what I owe to him in terms of XFN and how much we got and how much I owe to Frank, but it's also in my personal life. I've learned so much from him and so much in terms of filmmaking and just life experience that I could never, you know, hate him for anything or like have a well. I think the thing with Fox is that they hadn't officialized a website or a fan page or a fan group before. And they didn't know what to do with us.
Right.
And they didn't know how much to give, how much to take. Like I get it whenever they didn't have an answer or they didn't have a satisfactory result to something.
Yeah.
And so it was also an experiment for them. What to do. And they went on to officialize other pages later on and establish other relationships later on, which then, you know, it was funny to us because all of a sudden we were getting all these requests to be on books or studies back in England or here back east, where like they wanted to analyze this thing that then some people started calling the professional fan. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's been an amazing road. I don't think that anyone can learn the things that I learned unless you were involved in an experience such as this. And I guess like people like that are been trying to do the same experience with franchises such as like Star Trek or Star Wars. Maybe they've gone into those kind of ideas, Doctor Who or Harry Potter. Mm-hmm. But I might be wrong, but I don't think that they've had the same experience that we've had in going from, you know, being just a fan side to then becoming one of their tools to promote I Want to Believe, to then go into a third movie, then go into a show, then be actively involved in the promotion of that revival and having the relationship that we have with the producers. So
you guys pioneered it. You really did.
Yeah.
We're very proud of it. You know, it was always a we effort. It wasn't my effort. And it was everyone's effort. It was everyone's time and money and dedication and tears, many tears. Yeah. It's been amazing, I think.
Very cool. I mean, it was a huge project. And I don't think that many of us who sort of followed X-Files News understood the scope of it. And I think, I kind of assumed you guys were all getting paid, like, handsomely. And that's clearly not the case. because the product you were putting out was pretty professional, I think. And so, I mean, as a fan, I appreciated it. And I think you guys had a huge impact on the fandom in a really positive way. I mean, there's so many things I found out through X-Files News that I would never have found out otherwise. So I appreciated it. I think you guys did an amazing job, especially hearing all the stuff you had to deal with. So
absolutely.
Thanks for that.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. One of the reasons we actually decided to retire, it's because one, we feel like, you know, it's time for a new generation to take on what we did and do it their own way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I feel like all of us that are next event right now are a different generation from the fandom that is right now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We're not the Tumblr generation. We're barely the Twitter one.
I can sympathize. Yeah,
we're encroaching the Facebook one more than we want to care to admit. And so perhaps our experience can teach other people whether they want to continue communities as the one that we built to see if they can be as large as we had it at some point, to see if they want to do global initiatives as the ones that we did, like with Frank and Bear and with all these things that we did globalized that take a lot of effort. And I hope they do, because it's an experience that no one gets to have until you do it. And that opens your doors and your eyes to so many cultures, to so many human beings that you don't know that are out there that are as amazing as you think that your own neighbor can be. So, you know, that's my wish, that with our retirement, it doesn't mean that the fandom is done, or that, you know, the place of having communities or like new sites or anything is done. It's just that someone else take it, someone else do it, and it's fine. And we're glad to, like, you know, be a reference to someone, but we would like to learn how other people might do it as well. You know?
You guys have done more than your fair share, I'd say.
You've put in your time. I feel like that, if the show does continue, or even the fandom does continue, it just might be in a different form. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's still alive. It's definitely still alive. So, yeah.
And,
I mean,
and it will live through not only professional things, but also the fandom has taken over and it owns it now.
Right.
So, yeah. Like, you know, whether it be fan fiction or design stuff or whatever it is that you come up with, mm-hmm. it lives forever. Mm-hmm. And I know that at the end of the year, this year, we have a new book coming up that it's about the X-Files and like stuff that we don't know about the X-Files. So you're getting a little bit of a spoiler-ish. Ooh,
a little bit of dirt here.
I'm intrigued.
It's coming up. It's a book. I think you can see a little bit of a preview on Amazon. It's by Simon & Schuster.
Oh, cool.
I'll get you guys a link and you can put it up.
All right, cool. What's it going to be called?
I can't remember the name right now. But it's coming up on, all right. I think, October.
And I'm intrigued.
Yeah, it's really cool. I already saw a few of their things and it's pretty awesome.
Nice. And there's still definitely a big demand for that kind of stuff.
And then I'm sure that, you know, IDW is going to continue putting out things and there's other people that are going to continue doing stuff. JJ always does things with his art and I always read fanfic that everyone writes that is amazing because that's the other thing is that X-Files bred amazing writers whether they're professional or not. And it's really enjoyable to have this experience.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that the fans are definitely sort of taking it back, which is kind of what it always was, even though it was kind of channeled through you guys. It feels like it's still kind of, it's the same, it's just a different format. So
yeah, the fans have always had a big role in the X-Files, so that's, and they still do. I mean, it's like nothing else that I can see. I mean, there's no new content for the X-Files, but the fandom is... Oh, as big or bigger as it's ever been online. Yeah. And it, like you say, it'll follow whatever path the internet takes for the most part. Twitter wasn't a thing 10 years ago. It's a thing today. Mm-hmm. What will be the thing 10 years from now? Who knows? But whatever that thing is, I have a feeling we'll find X-Files fans there.
Yeah. It's, and what the world is today, because I kind of feel like the same reasons that were the reasons that put season 9 as the final season back then, is the same kind of set of reasons that sort of didn't make the revival work in some ways, not all the ways, but because back then, you know, we had 9/11 happen while season 9 was being shot. Mm-hmm. And what you want out of television is something entirely different when you're in times of anguish and war than when you're in times of peace. And then the revival was happening while, you know, regardless of what your political opinion is of our current government, we are in deep anguish.
Yeah.
And and so it's really hard to write a show taking that in mind and seeing whether you play the game of like what my audience needs versus the story that I want to tell. And so I put a little bit of what happened with the revival there. I put all the reasons there.
Too. Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, it's what happens now with whether the fandom, the stories that they decide to develop on their own, whether it's in like the season 12 that people wrote or whether it's in their own personal fanfics, it responds to what we are today. And and so I feel like if at any point we do get to have a new revival of the revival or whatever it happens formally, it needs to address who we are now.
Yeah. I think that Frank sort of said as much when he was talking, like you were alluding to, because I think you're right. I mean, overall, I'm a fan of the revival. I didn't hate it. I liked most of it. So I didn't, but I see what you're saying. It does really take on the tone of the time that you're in. And you have to sort of, you don't have any control over that. You know what I mean? Like you have to kind of form your world and form the world that you're writing these characters in around what we're used to and what we're living in. It's interesting to think that like, if it does ever come back, like what is the world going to be like?
Yeah.
When that happens, like, is it going to be worse? Like, I don't even want to think about that, but...
Yeah, and it's also the part where, for some people, the X-Files are the X-Files. But for some other people, the X-Files are Mulder and Scully.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so, I mean, it depends of which is your definition of success. If you mm-hmm. get to be really, you know, well received by the people that just want to hear stories, and whichever construct that you make out of the investigation team or whatever, mm-hmm. or you, I don't know, in the ways of magic, get to have Mulder and Scully again, and then tell Mulder and Scully stories, and that's an actual different show.
Yeah. Yeah. At the end of the day, I mean, you're not going to get any argument here. We're in it for Mulder and Scully all the way. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I at this point, after seeing the revival and reviewing the revival, I just want a well-told story. Mm-hmm. In the way of well-told stories that we were used to have. And we got some that were really well-told.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Glenn Morgan's episodes were the most solid ones. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoyed them as much as it pains me. And, like, you know, I can see where Chris wanted to go with his bookends, but mm-hmm. you needed more than one episode to develop those ideas.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you needed editing of those stories to make them sound. And there was just parts of the storyline that weren't needed.
Yeah. The song that I always sing on this podcast is that with most things that bother me about the show, it's all in the execution. It's not necessarily, I mean, Chris is a really good idea man. I think he really is. And you're never going to get any Chris Carter hate here. We both love Chris and appreciate Chris for what he has given us. Even though there have been many missteps along the way, which, I mean, everyone's entitled to agree with. I think that I see what he was trying to do with the revival. I think the climate was a poor climate to do it in. Yeah. And he pushed ahead anyway, which I'm sure you've had a million conversations about this, especially even with him, yes. which I know can lead to lots of frustration. I completely understand. I read that interview and I wanted to tear my hair out after I read it. But and I try not to read interviews with him because my personal opinion about Chris is that, like, he's a huge troll. Like, I feel like he's always out trying to get a rise out of people. Like, and I mean, it works because he does. Look at me right now. I'm like waving my arms around in frustration. But, like, I totally see what he was trying to do with the struggles. I get it. I just feel like we're in the wrong time for it. People were in the wrong frame of mind to be ready for that. And I'm not just referring to the William thing. I'm referring to, like, all of it. It was just sort of like, hey, is this the story that we wanted to hear right now? Probably not.
I mean, I have a thing where my struggle 1 and 2, I was still on it. I still like, okay, I'm willing to see what's next.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
When we land on my struggle 3 and I get half of it retcon, I'm like, okay, so, well, I give up on this.
You're gonna Jen is going to agree with you, but I'm always the defender.
I am
always the defender that it's not a retcon. I don't think Chris works that way. I think he always keeps a million possibilities in his pocket so that he can pick and choose whatever he wants to, and it can work, because it can work. The horrible smoking man retcon, quote unquote, works perfectly when you look back.
But it's not about the smoking man,
right?
It's the making my struggle to a dream, mm-hmm. and then building that reality that was really specific. And then discarding that reality, because then when you land on my struggle 3, supposedly is going back to that moment where CSM is going to set up the steps to land on this gigantic debacle of society, mm-hmm. and supposedly he's doing this, and supposedly this is a dream that is, you know, what could happen, that Scully is getting some kind of premonition in her own imagination, whatever it is that you want to see it like. Mm-hmm. But then it's disjointed how these baby steps that he signaled on my struggle 2 then come to play on my struggle 3 and my struggle 4, because one of the things that it's like, oh, well, we're going to save the world by is getting William and then getting his DNA to create something out of it. That is never addressed. It's completely forgotten. Yeah. And then CSM's ambitions to do the actions that he's going to do, that supposedly is the origin of whatever fantasy she's living in on My Struggle Too, are never going to lead to what, you know, it's happening on My Struggle 3. Because in My Struggle 3, you have Purdue and you have all this stuff that it's not, you know, it's not leading to that.
I agree with you that it's not narratively sound. Like, it doesn't make sense in that regard. I don't think My Struggle 2 is a retcon in terms of, I think he always knew it was a vision.
Even if he did that it was a vision, even if it's like, oh, well, some parts of it will be correct and some others will be distorted, some others will be changed because of actions that happen in My Struggle 3 and My Struggle 4 and throughout the next season. The problem is that even those anchors are not properly addressed.
Okay.
So it is a retcon by the fact that you don't utilize them later on.
Yeah. I don't want to start talking about the revival forever, but I think they do. I think that they do because the idea is that William, Smoking Man can't get a hold of William, because if he does get a hold of William, this pandemic will be released, unleashed.
How?
I don't know how. And I'm just as frustrated with you that I don't know all of the every single sort of, but it's so funny because I'm having the weirdest deja vu right now, because 3 years ago or 4 years ago or whenever My Struggle 2 aired, and I was on your side of this argument, and I was so frustrated, and I now am on the other side of it thinking, well, it doesn't matter. It's the X-Files. They're not going to tell you everything. The idea is that Scully is seeing the vision of what could happen if Smoking Man gets a hold of her son, and that's what her vision is telling her. And the idea is that they prevent that at the end by killing Smoking Man, and so the pandemic is never going to be released. So they address it. It's just not in a really interest. It's not like in an interesting, clear way, you know. And again, that's the narrative execution that I don't think was well.
It's also whenever we were on, ironically, season 10, even though it was smaller in like a number of episodes, it was a bigger universe than it was season 11.
I would agree with that.
Because you see these episodes and it's as if the texture has disappeared. It's as if the only people that exist in the world, it's the people that we need to see in order to tell the story. But the logic has been taken out of many things. For instance, car trips take a couple hours when they could take eight. Or like,
well, we should all be thankful that Chris Carter did not do 8-hour car chases, because they were already long enough. So, but
gotta get those Ford vehicles in there.
Your point is taken. That's actually a really good point, because it does seem like in an effort to sort of like course correct what people didn't like about season 10, they lost some of the things that were good about season 10. And I would absolutely agree with that assessment. It's like, even if I look at like one of everybody's favorite episodes is this, the Glenn Morgan one, which was fantastic. It really revolved around Mulder and Scully the entire time, but it was one of the very few episodes that had this sort of really big world, what's the
world
word?
Building.
Not world building. I don't mean that. I just mean like it had impact on a bigger world than just our heroes. Like, we knew what they were doing. They were talking about like things that we should be afraid of and like we should fear, like the whole thing about the cell phones and everything.
And that is world building. That is, because it's not only about the central plot line, which is the A line, but also all these B lines and the actual texture of where all these happens and the colors in the background that actually make you believe that the moment that you're living with them, it could exist in a world that you can t- touch.
Exactly.
And that's why, you know, even though we don't particularly know the people from the attackers that are coming to their house, we fear them. And that's mm-hmm. why we kind of understand why Skinner won't come to their help right away. And that's why, well, you know, this actual place that exists in New York has a presence to us, and them eating in a diner in the middle of the thing, and like all these comments and little things that gave texture to that world mm-hmm. are mm-hmm. so rich to us, as opposed mm-hmm. to like things that are kind of like concepts thrown into, yeah. you know, a bag, and we're supposed to take leaps to understand what's happening. And it's expecting way too much
yes.
from a show that it's not on Netflix, that we only get to watch that one night, and then wait for Hulu, and then we wait, and then we rewatch. And then the problem with that is that we're no longer in broadcast television model.
No.
We now live in a society that it's use and spoil, quote unquote, and having something that they can watch and watch at their own time. Mm-hmm. And then you broadcast television works in a model where Nielsen tells you whether you are good or not. Mm. And the people that are, you know, being measured by Nielsen are in particular the people that are going to watch it online. And so, mm-hmm. you know, there were many, many things that contributed to the show not moving forward.
Yeah.
No, and it wasn't only the fact that Jillian wanted to leave. It wasn't only the fact that the episodes weren't living up to what they hoped for. It wasn't only the numbers. It was so much that contributed to this. And it wasn't for lack of knowledge. Mm. I think it was coming back to a world that was unknown to some.
Yeah. I think that people, too, have, like, attention spans that are, like, so tiny now, and that Chris Carter back in the 90s, what he expected and received from an audience, he's not going to get that anymore. And yeah. I think I've always said too that I think that he's making a show now for an audience that isn't there anymore, and I think that that's the biggest problem. And I don't necessarily think it's the problem is with the work itself. I just think the problem is with the way that are these current viewers are consuming and interacting with this work.
Going back to you have to make a choice between the story that you want to tell mm-hmm. and pleasing the audience that you want to tell it to.
Absolutely.
So, like, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, there are ways to strike a middle point there, but you have to be able to, like, put down the pencil at some point and understand that this is not only your passion project, but also something that has to have, you know, a way to survive.
Yeah.
Business.
I think a lot of it is that the X-Files has such a huge legacy, and I think people get a little they take it personally, and I understand this, that when that legacy is a little bit tarnished or diminished by things that seem unnecessary, you know what I mean? So I think that's kind of where that's in my opinion where the revival went wrong, because I think that's what a lot of people would think, that that's where the revival went wrong. But you know, we've gotten far off track, right? We've gotten far off track, but I do appreciate talking about that with you, Avi, because I did want to hear your take person to person on how you felt about all that. So
yeah, I find your perspective really interesting, Avi, because you know the idea of world building and all that kind of thing, it's not something that I am very fluent with, but it makes a lot of sense to me, and it's really, really interesting to hear that perspective. So I really appreciate it, because you're a professional. I mean, you are professionally trained in the world of entertainment, and you're still working in it as a producer and a writer. What kind of what sort of work have you been doing in the most sort of last couple of years?
So I've been working for Frank Spotnitz since mm-hmm. 2015, right mm-hmm. after New York Comic Con, actually.
All right.
I sort of like, as a, I guess, trial by fire without knowing, we were in New York Comic Con for the premiere of the first episode of The X-Files, and he was promoting the premiere of Man in the High Castle.
Oh.
And while I was there, I got introduced to the people that were promoting Man in the High Castle. Mm-hmm. And Frank spoke to them about the work that we had been doing at XFN. Mm. And we thought, well, you know, this is kind of like neighboring tasks. And since we're here, let's promote Man in High Castle as well. And we went and interviewed the cast, interviewed him, and they had screenings in town. And I even though we were dying tired, we're like, let's just like, you know, give away stuff and like, let's do all the stuff inside that they didn't actually have planned. And so Frank liked the work that I did then, and the publicity people did too. So I got hired to be the social person for his company. And then I got them lumped into, oh, let's do the social promotion for Medici, which was his next show.
Right.
And then that became, I'm like, oh, let's do the social thing for Ransom, which was our next show in Big Light.
Right.
And so I became gradually the digital content producer for the company, which was not only for Big Light as a company corporate thing, but also the shows that we produce, which is a great opportunity because I have such a different array of things that I get to do. It's not only doing the social part and learning new fandoms every day and seeing how to speak to them and be part of that fandom itself, because our policy is not that we're like looking down on them, but we're trying to enjoy the experience of enjoying the shows with them. And see what they want with them and what they like with them. And so that's what's important of our philosophy of doing social for a show.
Cool.
And that comes a lot from my experience on XFN, is that we never wanted to like look down on the fandom. We were part of the fandom. So it's that part of it. And the other part of it is that it goes back to my comment as to why I left HBO, is that if I wanted to promote a show, I wanted to have full input from the creators of the show and communicate exactly what the show means to them, regardless of the need of promoting it in a way that needs to be attractive. It's more important to be wholesome and not lie to our audience. And so I'm kind of getting what I wanted back then. And then there's the whole immense pleasure and privilege of working for Frank, who's, you know, just one of the most amazing, you know, writers that we have now. He's an amazing boss, very generous, and such a great teacher and mentor. And so I don't know that I can, you know, ever thank enough my blessings for like what my job is every day. But it's a great opportunity, and that's my job in Big Light. And then in Los Angeles, I've done a lot of things. One of them was I teach the American Film Institute, which is the actual school that I graduated for a master in producing in 2011. So like,
very cool.
I do mentoring there, and I teach a class from time to time.
What class do you teach?
I teach line producing.
Can I reveal my ignorance and say, what does a line producer do?
So a line producer takes the scripts and breaks them down into what the schedule might be and what the cost of shooting something in that schedule might be.
Oh, cool.
And then goes and hires everyone.
Wow.
If you're in television, you might even end up hiring the director.
Oh, wow.
If you're in features, it might be the other way around, that you come in after a producer and a director have been picked.
Okay.
That's
a really big job.
It is a really big job.
Wow.
That's what I do. And then otherwise, I am a line producer in town. So I get hired to either be part of the production team, helping a line producer, or I am a line producer. Mm-hmm. So since I came back in 2015, I produced a show for Awesomeness TV, which was I was the line producer for. That was a 12-episode show. And I've done a series of short films and a couple of features. I just shot a feature in the first 3 weeks of December with a few friends of mine that I always worked with that I had most fun with. And that's part of the reason why I'm not always active in production. It's because I'm either too busy with Frank work, or I don't want to take projects that I know I'm not going to have fun in. Because working on set in town is pretty grueling already. Mm. And if you're on top of that going to work with people that you don't enjoy being with, then, you know, it's kind of.
Yeah. That would suck. Yeah. you got a lot of balls in the air.
Other than that, I'm writing a book and I'm creative and producing another script with a friend. Yeah. And you know, doing things here and there for my friends.
Cool.
I cook a lot.
Wow.
But yeah.
You're a woman of many talents.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's very impressive and very cool. And I mean, from the way that what you've told us about your story, which is really interesting to me, it's a real reminder to me of how important it is to promote yourself and to be proactive and to just go after the things that you're interested in. And you can't wait for them to come to you because you've made things happen. And I think that's tremendously impressive.
And I get it whenever people say it's not easy or that they can't do it, because there are definitely days that I can't do it. There are days that I'm like, nope, I'm not good enough for this. I can't do that. And that's part of the struggle of someone that it's picked a self-starting profession to be their profession.
Yeah.
Is that if you can get over that, you're going to have a really bad time. And I can tell you from the get-go that I've had times where I'm like, oh, thank God that I have XFN, because it keeps me going. It gives me, you know, giving me proof that I can do things.
Yeah.
And so that was part of leaving XFN. It was kind of like, okay, now you don't have that crutch. Mm. Now you need to fill the time that you had for XFN and doing things, the things that you said to yourself, when XFN is done, I'm going to do this. When XFN is done, I'm going to shoot that. And when XFN is done, I'm going to write that. And so you need to keep yourself motivated with whatever it is that keeps you motivated. And that those 2 days that you spend in bed, kind of like wallowing, you might need those today, but it can become, you know, your everyday.
Yeah, it's a cool business. That's why I'm an administrative assistant, because I can't live like that with that kind of uncertainty. So I tremendously admire people that can.
I can tell you that I've wished to have picked at some point a career like yours.
Yeah.
Because it would have been a lot easier. And it doesn't, yeah. I mean, there's this one thing that I guess it's my motto is that, you know, I made a choice into like making this my way of life, but it has to have a meaning. You can't just be, you know, kind of like having so much hardship sometimes, or like having to work so hard for something, if at the end of the day, you're just doing it for the sake of it and not, you know, leaving behind some kind of something that it's good for society or good for your family or good for the world. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that whenever we take on a new project, and that is not just for like a paycheck, but like a show that we're working so hard on, is like, are we going to change the world with this? Mm-hmm. Are we going to make people think? Is this something that is going to nurture society to be better and make them, you know, question their beliefs very much like the X-Files did? Mm-hmm. Into thinking beyond their backyard, and that's my goal in life. Because otherwise, then sacrificing myself to a career that is so hard makes no sense.
Yeah. I think maybe that's a good place for us to sort of wrap up. Did you want to add anything, Annie?
No, I mean, thank you so much for coming on. This was a really cool conversation. I love hearing about everything. Like, just thank you for all of the stuff that you've done for the fandom and over the years. And I mean, I honestly am super, super happy that you have ended up where you are, because it's such a cool like success story to me. Like, honestly, like when I found out that like it was that you were the same Avi that worked for Frank, and like when I made all the connections, I was like, holy shit, I was like, that is like really sort of kismet, like the way that path, and that was such a hard path from what you said, led you to where you are today, and how rewarding that must feel, and how lucky you must feel. I know as hard as it is, it's super rewarding, you know what I mean? I'm sure it is. So
the harder that it is, it actually, you know, And it was one of the reasons people tell me all the time, why are you like working for Frank? It's so hard to work the hours because we work London hours. So I have to be up at London hours. And, and like, you know, I have to pass on products in town because I'm doing that.
Yeah.
And, oh, you could be like here in this company and that other company and whatever other company. I'm like, look, it's not only the fact that Frank gave me the opportunity that I always dreamed about, but also it's the fact that I'm working for not only a guy, but a company that believes in the same values that I do. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, like you said, it's a privilege. It's a thing that it's been brewing all of my life, from becoming a fan to admiring his work to by chance meeting him in Chile to, and this is something that I didn't mention, but we mentioned the worldwide project where like we organized all these countries and the videos that we did on XFN. The reason why I ended up going to film school, it's because we did a screening here in LA of that thing. And I wasn't even here. I was back in Venezuela. I was planning on applying to AFI. And they show the thing. And Tiffany Duvall, who was my partner in crime at the time, is sitting right next to Frank. And she comments in passing, well, you know, Avi is trying to apply to AFI. And, you know, she's doing all the process. She needs a recommendation. She needs all the stuff. And he had just seen Place, which is this kind of documentary thing that we did for XFN. And he's like, oh, really? And he ended up being the person that wrote a recommendation for me to go to AFI.
Wow.
And if it hadn't been for him, I probably wouldn't have been able to come here. I haven't been able to like come back to the States whenever I had to. And it was my brand throughout AFI as well, because everyone knew me because I was the X-Files girl. And back in the day, Bob Mandel was the dean at AFI, who was the director of the pilot of the X-Files.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And he would walk into our offices where I had an office, and every producer has an office in second year. And I had this gigantic X-Files thing and had all the X-Files trinkets and all the stuff. And he would just stand there and talk to me whenever he didn't even talk to any of the producers.
Wow.
You know, like, for me, it's been an amazing road that from time to time I had to like pinch myself like, hey, remember whenever it's sucky, look at all this stuff that it's amazing.
Yeah.
And it's great. And I hope that from here on, it's just like even greater, and that all the efforts and all the sacrifice and all the stuff that we've done now gets to be fruit for other things.
Mm-hmm. So cool. I think your story is super, super interesting. And I think you have a very cool life. So did you have anything else you wanted to add before we wrap up, Avi?
No, other than thank you so much for the work that you guys do. I mean, you're part of the stuff that we were mentioning that, you know, I hope that other people take on maintaining this community in one way or another. And presenting other aspects that we never got to because we never had time to, or we never knew them. So like, you know, it's interesting whenever you guys bring up stuff that we never knew that, and then we are the audience, and that's amazing. Cool. Now that we're enjoying being the audience, and this is going to be our first year of being the audience. And so far we're enjoying it. We have these like lists going on of like, oh, these are the fanfic that we never got to read.
So cool.
You can go from professional fan to just enjoying being a fan for a while. So.
Just the fun part of being a fan. So
that's
very cool. Wow, that's very cool to think about you guys kind of enjoying the work that other people are producing now.
Yeah.
So that's very cool as well. So
that's
the wonderful thing about fandom. We're all kind of, we take whatever we're good at and contribute in whatever way we can. And so that's all really cool. So thank you very, very, very much, Avi, for joining us and for your incredible stories and your incredible insights and all of the time that we took. So thank you very, very much for that. We appreciate that. You come on back anytime you feel like it. And you'd always be welcome here at X-Files Diaries.
All right.
So thank you very much. Thank you again. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And by all means, tweet at us at XFD Podcast and let us know what your take is on our conversations this evening. We'd love to hear from you guys, as always. So thanks again, everyone. And we'll talk to you next time on X-Files Diaries. Mm-hmm.